Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I do always find the Google Hangouts, you've got a like phone call sound much mm-hmm. more relaxing than the Skype one.
Well, the boop beep.
Yeah, that one like induces stress. It's like pick up the phone. Whereas like yeah. Google Hangouts is like, hey, someone, hey, yeah. hey.
Da 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 da.
It's like very, da, da, it's da, very da, da. Gentle.
It's very gentle. I'm sure it's very Google. You know,
it is very Google. Yeah, there is something Google. Secretly insidious about it.
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theatre Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with sheet music and shot glasses.
I like that. I like that it's like two words both times.
We're getting we've done all the one words.
I was thinking about this after A Little Night Music too, like in the same way that we're going to run out of Sondheim shows eventually.
Yeah.
We're going to run out of different ways to say alcohol.
Yeah, we're just going to have to do start doing brands, do you know what I mean?
Ooh, what if we start... Man, if you're an alcohol brand out there that wants to advertise on our show and send us free samples...
I mean, that would be great, but is that legal?
JimAndTomic@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Subject line, free booze.
Yes, please. that's your reference. Speaking of, what's on the menu today?
Oh, I got a right little glass of a dime vodka because it's the Great Depression. And that's all.
You keep stealing my ideas. Mine was just going to be water from a puddle because it's the Great Depression. Because that's all they drank. That's all they drank.
Oh, man. Why? But why? I'll tell you why. It's related to our quiz question, isn't it?
Aha, that's new.
You probably remember this, Jimmy.
I've got a vague recollection.
Our quiz question from last week.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Zeta-Jones marked her Broadway debut in the 2009 revival of A Little Night Music, which we covered last time. But this was far from her theatrical stage debut. In fact, she got her big break in a West End production of this musical. What show?
42nd Street.
Come and meet those dancing feet on the avenue I'm taking you to. 42nd Street. Hear the beat of dancing feet. It's the song I love, the melody of 42nd Street. Little nifties from the 50s, innocent and sweet. Sexy ladies from the 80s who are indiscreet. They're side by side, they're glorified. Where the underworld can meet the elite. Where the underworld can meet the elite. 42nd Street.
Can I tell you how difficult it is?
Yeah.
To find YouTube videos about 42nd Street and like the Tony Award performance of things. I mean, it's not that hard. Google's great, mm-hmm. but they're always interspersed with like, here's a tour of the 42nd Street subway tunnel. And I'm like, that's not what I'm looking for.
Not really what I was wanting. Well, I typed in, because I was trying to find stuff about Guru Champion, mm-hmm. and I typed in 42nd Street death. Announcement,
uh-huh.
and then quickly realized
that's not going to do you much.
Just good. Lots of very
lots
depressing
of, lots of people have died on 42nd Street.
Yes,
42nd Street.
Yeah, it's a musical.
It is. It's a musical about Broadway.
It is.
First,
it's like
probably.
Yeah, and so it's like a backstage musical, and any sort of trope that you've seen of a backstage show has probably been pinched. From this.
Seems very likely. Based on a Warner Brothers movie from 1933, mm-hmm. The actual Broadway production came out in 1980.
It did. That's a long time.
At the Winter Garden Theater. Won Best Musical, Best Choreography. And it's got... Do you know Harry Warren and Al Dubin? I never knew their names until we started looking them up, but they've written everything.
Well, not everything, but a lot of things. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
all of the ones that I've got listed here, Jeepers Creepers. Jeepers Creepers has been a favorite of mine for years, Thomas.
Really? I sang Chattanooga Choo Choo in show choir.
Amazing. Pardon me, boys. The first time I saw Chattanooga Choo Choo, it was a cow singing it to Pinky and Perky where they were tied to the railroad tracks in a Pinky and Perky sketch.
You've said these words like I'm supposed to understand what they mean, yes, so I'm going to nod.
I will now take questions. Yes, you, sir, in the glasses.
What is Pinky and Perky?
So I think they're American, are they not? Pinky and Perky, the little pigs? Two little pigs?
No.
First show note of the day. Pinky and Perky.
Oh. Singing Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Yeah, well, the cow, remember the cow...
Oh, right, the cow, pardon me, boys.
Yeah, so they were doing it was like a sort of a, I guess like parody of like silent film. So they were like tied to the tracks.
Oh, okay.
And then the cow, I think the cow had done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was really young, so plot lines were vague, but I think the cow had done it and I was kind of like mocking them, being like, pardon me, boys. Is that the Chattanooga Choo Choo?
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
They've written Track everything, 29. Including including a bunch of hit songs from or that ended up in 42nd Street, like Lullaby of Broadway.
Yep.
We're in the Money.
Yep.
And then what else? On the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe, which is a song I learned in my childhood. I don't know why.
Excellent.
42nd Street.
What about I Like You Very Much?
Yes.
Made famous by Carmen Miranda.
The Lady in the Tutti Frutti Hat. But yeah. And then I don't know these two book writers.
So they did Barnum.
Okay.
That's their biggest.
Michael Stewart and Mark Bramble.
Mm-hmm.
They did Barnum. That makes sense.
Yeah. And Michael Stewart, I think, has done more than Mark Bramble. But together, they did Barnum.
He's okay. So Michael Stewart is Bye Bye Birdie, Hello Dolly. Yeah. Okay. That makes some sense.
Yeah. Huh. Mark Bramble, since though, has gone on to direct like pretty much any of the productions.
Really?
Since. Yeah, and sort of a, what do you call him? Arthur Lawrence style.
Okay. Book writer, director.
Yeah.
That makes
so that's good.
Sense.
It came over to the West End in 1984.
It was big in the West End, was it not?
It was really big, yeah. It was big on Broadway. Many people, and I don't know where this statistic or saying comes from, but people say it's the biggest Broadway musical ever. But I mean,
where that comes from. That reads to me as like top of poster.
Yeah, no, completely. And you see it a lot, and they're using it. So it's being revived on the West End very soon, like next week.
Yeah, I saw a trailer.
And previews begin. Yeah. And they're kind of using as their publicity, like Broadway's biggest show and things like that. I'm like, that's not.
Yeah, no, that's strange. I wonder, I mean, that I could see a marketing agency in the 1980s being like, well, our stage is, you know, 6 inches bigger than the biggest stage on Broadway.
Yeah, exactly.
And that makes this the biggest Broadway
show. Like, I know.
Our cast has an average height of 1 inch, and you know,
yes,
whatever.
Exactly. I mean, there is a large cast, and I don't know whether it comes from that, but I'm thinking like, you know, Chorus Line had a big cast.
Yeah.
Lots of shows have big, so I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder. Show your sources. Cite your sources.
Exactly. Citation needed. We have that. The company that I worked for in Edinburgh. We had that. We have a quote, a pull quote called that we are the best amateur theatre group in Britain.
Ooh,
fantastic quote.
That's a great quote.
But it's now become the stuff of legend because we can no longer find the source.
It's probably at the end of the sentence saying some might call them the best amateur theater group in Britain. However,
others wouldn't. No, we know where it's from, and we've asked for it, but we've never heard a reply. So it's not our fault. We've tried. So 42nd Street. What is it about? I mean, let's rattle through the plot, please.
It is 42nd Street is based on the Warner Brothers movie of the same name, which is based on a novel that I've never actually heard much of. 42nd Street is the backstage musical. It's the backstage musical.
Mm.
They're putting on a show. famed director
Julian Marsh is doing a show.
Famed director Julian Marsh is putting on a show in the height of the Great Depression. He lost a bunch of money because it's the Great Depression, so this one has to go well. We watch the casting of all the chorus girls and all their legs, which is a weird, antiquated thing. You know, legs.
They you know, put on the legs. Show.
They go through grueling nights of rehearsals. There's drama related to the leading lady's relationship with the lead producer, but also
who
she's
is the
got
one
a...
that's supplying the money.
Exactly, but she's also got a vaudeville man on the side, which, you know, is cause for some trepidation among those in the know. And then, horror of horrors, Jimmy, on the day before opening night, out of town opening tryouts,
the leading lady...
Did she break her ankle? She sprain her ankle? She hurts herself.
She breaks her ankle.
She breaks her... She can't go on. What are we going to do?
Well, let's take this young ingenue and persuade her that
you can do it, honey. Yeah, what's the line? You're going to go out there...
You're going to go out there, a little girl, and you're going to come out a star or some of that.
You're going to come out a star. And it sounds, the way we describe it and the way we're talking about it, this sounds tropish and like it's been done a million times before. But the only reason it's been done a million times is because the movie 42nd Street did it first. This is the first time this kind of trope of a backstage musical happened. And this kind of, you know...
Yeah, well, the film was made in a time when musicals were becoming musicals. So it's the first time that we get to really see how the sausage is made, to pull a reference.
Yeah.
The plot is exactly what it is. It harks back to all of these kind of really early days. You know, it's your anything goes. It's your top hats.
Exactly.
You know, it's very fun, lively plot. Yeah. Nothing too.
It does. Dark. It does make it really interesting from a musical theater perspective. This is definitely present in the movie and maybe halfway present when you hit the stage show. Because it is a show about putting on a show, the vast majority of the songs are diegetic. But they're diegetic in the context of the musical they're doing, which is called Girls, Girls, Girls
Pretty
or
Lady.
Something. Pretty Lady.
Pretty Lady.
It doesn't matter what it's called. It is such... No one cares about the plot of the actual show they're doing. It's
I very much doubt there is one. If it's called Pretty Lady.
Basically, and it's just a bunch of women in it, and then there's a train. But so, most of the songs in the show, save maybe one or two, don't actually progress or even have anything to do with the like bread and butter book of the show of like what's actually going on. Almost all of them are rehearsal or performance numbers from the show that they're doing. And I would wager to say this is one of the 1933 movie is one of the first times this kind of cheat, this trope has existed. And it's become a little more prevalent in musical theater since then.
I mean, a lot of the songs aren't in the movie.
That's true.
Only got like a little handful, doesn't it?
It's got maybe five or six of them. And then they pulled more from, like they pulled some from The Gold Diggers of 1933, which was the spiritual successor to this movie. Like Where in the Money was from that.
Yeah.
And a couple other Tin Pan Alley style songs were pulled here and there to put it, to flesh out the actual musical.
Yep. But from the actual, from the actual film. But I think, I don't know enough about films of that era to... to remark on that one, but the film itself was very revolutionary. You know,
I'll tell you all about it later. It was very revolutionary and wildly popular.
Oh, I can't break away. I must have you every day, as regularly as coffee or tea. You've got me in your clutches and I can't get free. You're getting to be a habit with me. Can't break it. You're getting to be a habit with me.
Well, should we talk about the movie?
Sure, let's talk about the movie.
Great.
1932, 1933. It actually, the copyright at the beginning of the movie, I think the beginning of the movie, the copyright says 1932, and at the end of the movie, it says 1933.
Wow, that's a long film.
I think it's just a mistake. But no, so I was doing research about the production of the film. They filmed the whole thing in a month.
That's impressive.
That's crazy.
Is that budgetary?
I think it's just, that's just the way the studio culture was at the time. You churn out these movies like nobody's business. This was an early, I always say his name wrong.
Busby Berkeley.
Yes. Movie, who did all of the choreography. If you've ever seen a shot of dancers from above in a circle, that's a Busby Berkeley thing. He invented that.
He really was the best of his time.
Yes.
Absolutely. He creates or has created that image in your mind of, you know, what 1930s kind of folly style dancing.
Yeah, he really invented that. Like, if you watch this movie, there are some iconic shots in here. Like, there's a really iconic shot through all the legs of the chorus girls.
That is such a great shot.
It's a wonderful
regardless
shot.
Of anything.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
It's very clever and interesting and, you know, all the awful things it says about women aside is very evocative and, you know, sexy and salacious and visually interesting and almost hypnotizing in a way. It's very, with this kind of film choreography, did a bunch of reinventing. And so this is early on in his career. And actually, at the time this movie came out, the concept, I think this is fascinating. The concept of movie musicals was dying in the 1930s. People were losing interest in movie musicals in the 1930s. And this musical, 42nd Street, is kind of earmarked as getting people excited about movie musicals again, which I think is really interesting when compounded with a lot of the things 42nd Street has done later in its life. The movie holds pretty closely to the plot of the musical. I guess it's the other way around. The musical does a good job with the plot of the movie, where the movie just kind of does it in an okay way, because it's just a serial musical film. But the choreography is wonderfully interesting, and the plot is at least not uninteresting. There's enough drama going on to keep you interested.
Definitely, definitely. And I think they do that by kind of keeping it simple.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's not too many characters flying about the place. Mm-hmm. Everyone you get and you understand. There's not too many twists and turns and relationships flying out everywhere. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. And I think one of the crazy things about the whole longevity of this musical, again, we talked about some of this with like Guys and Dolls. The movie came out contemporaneously. It is set in the Great Depression and came out in the Great Depression and was about life then. But then the musical itself, the Broadway existence of it, is a period piece because it's about the movie, about the time. And that does interesting things to all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I can see one of the reasons it being wildly successful is because it's a very hopeful film.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This idea of, you know, you can be anyone you want to be, follow your dreams, etc.
Yeah.
Is very inspiring.
Yeah.
And so I can totally see everyone at that time, you know, that we've talked about this before, but like needing something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that it's almost the crux of the whole thing. The movie ends like a lot of movie musicals of the time do, with a big production number, a Gene Kelly style, you know, we're going to end it with a big dream sequence in modern day New York.
It's huge.
And it's about 42nd Street. And it kind of encapsulates that kind of hopefulness through the Great Depression, you know, and it's the lyrics alone, the 42nd Street where the underworld can meet the elite down on 42nd Street. And the idea that we're bringing all of these, you know, chorus girls, actor types who are considered to be the seedy, impoverished, you know, like not do nothing, you know, victims of the Great Depression are performing for the, you know, top hat and white tie elite in the audience and also sleeping with them on the side. And it is this kind of melding of the haves and the have nots. And like, there's a lot for a very fluffy show tune style music. There's a real undercurrent of some commentary going on here, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But it's that thing. I feel like at the time, it probably wouldn't even feel like commentary because it's just kind of real. Do you know
what
I mean?
It's just life. Yeah.
And from the trailer, interestingly enough, I love old-fashioned movie trailers. I think they're the best thing in the world. But from the trailer, they were saying apparently like 2,000 girls came to audition for this show and only 500 were picked. All of these beautiful women ready to dance for you this evening, that kind of thing. But I think that's, you know, if you think about that, like, you know, 2,000 people, that's a lot of people who were probably extremely poor. You know, and then it's, I find it really interesting that in the musical, that they've thrown in We're in the Money.
Yeah, from Gold
for that exact reason. Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I think is, I don't know, I find that a good call. Because it is all about these chorus girls who are fighting.
Yeah. And it becomes, I mean, this in the same way, I hate to draw this comparison. I think one of the reasons 42nd Street, especially on Broadway, is so popular because it gives that kind of backstage insight and it is easy for the people who would be auditioning for it to like have a handle on their characters because it's them. The reason 42nd Street is successful, I think, is the same reason La La Land is successful, because it has that kind of inside baseball talk. And I feel like pieces of art that are about the art making in the world they exist in often find increased critical success among the knowers, among the people who live in those worlds, because they feel an attachment to the content. You know, books about writing books, movies about making movies, shows about putting on shows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at something like A Chorus Line, it is, you know, one of the most successful films of all time, and it's, you can't get realer.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like A Chorus Line is like 42nd Street Dark.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. A Chorus Line is what would happen if you started with the same germ of an idea for 42nd Street in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's a good little film.
It is.
And to be honest, it's worth a watch.
It is.
Even for just the numbers alone.
Yeah.
Because it's proper old Hollywood.
Yes.
It's fab.
Absolutely.
I also saw, just bring it up so I can put it in the show notes. It's an amazing, amazing video of old Hollywood bloopers. Right? Which you would never think about.
Yeah.
It's just all of these people just being like, oh, god damn. Oh, god damn. That's what everyone said. That is like the curse word of the time. Shows you how far we've moved on.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But it's
wonderful.
So funny just seeing like, literally like Humphrey Bogart being like, oh, god damn. You know what I mean? It's so... It's great. It's really, really great. So it's in the show notes.
It's a really good. It's a good movie in general to watch too. And an early appearance of Ginger Rogers.
Big Ginge. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Not taking the leading lady spot yet.
No, long. I think quite some time before that.
Yeah, she looks great though.
Yeah, they all look
another
really
beautiful girl for you to marvel at.
Yeah, and of course, complete with the caveat that, like any movie from the 1930s, it's filled with rampant sexism and racism. So, you know, different time. Wasn't good then, not good now, but still exists.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of those. I feel like we've kind of talked about that in musical theater. Probably enough.
Yes. Well,
we know
maybe
it's
never
bad.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But
also, I don't think 42nd Street, even the stage musical, like... The stage musical does change some of the... in the movie, they're casting the girls because they're women. They cast them and they're like, pull up your skirt, let me see your leg. Like, they are objectified as, you know, bodies. By the time it makes it to the stage musical in 1980s, that's toned down a little bit. And I do think it's a little bit more about, you know, your talent and your dancing. But then there is the song like, you know, dames are temporary
dames.
Flames.
Yeah,
you don't remember their names. Like,
yes.
we're still not doing great things for feminism.
No, it's not going to be the banner for the feminist movement.
No, I mean, like the poster is a scantily clad woman with a boa. Like,
exactly.
Can't
it's interesting. Like if you watch something like Broadway American Musical, in the early days, they interview quite a lot of like Follies girls and things like that. It's interesting because at the time it was the ultimate job, because it was like if you were a Follies girl, you're the most beautiful person out there, and you could use that
yeah.
as a status symbol.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Which, in you know, it's different times.
It is different times. It's interesting.
It's fascinating that yeah. those girls were the elite
yeah.
in many ways.
Well, because, you know, you're getting employment. You're working on your own. You're, you know, making your own way in the world.
Absolutely.
In, you know, a very, it's a definitely a mixed bag there.
Yep.
But you're not, yeah, yeah.
Times have changed.
Yeah, not fast enough.
For bouquets that grow for all those cute and cunning young and beautiful dames. Dames are temporary flames. To you, dames, you don't recall their names. To you, but their caresses and home addresses linger in your memory of those beautiful. In your memory, see those beautiful. In your memory, all those beautiful things.
Let's talk sad things. Let's talk sad things out of the way.
Yep.
So, this is one of a few musicals now, or just a few shows and things, which had their opening night tainted by a very sad thing. So, Gower Champion, mm-hmm. who is the director choreographer that you'll probably definitely know from Hello Dolly, mm-hmm. But need to know for 42nd Street. So yep. this was his last thing. Are you getting feedback?
There is a cricket.
Oh, it's a cricket?
There's a cricket that Linus hasn't eaten, and I'm trying to like move the microphone so it doesn't.
Sorry, you just said there's a cricket that Linus hasn't eaten?
Yeah, Linus is the lizard.
What? Is he named after Linus Van Pelt?
Yeah, it used to be Linus and Lucy. Lucy didn't make it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lucy.
I mean, it was like 7 years ago.
Okay.
Linus is a grumpy old curmudgeon and got fresh crickets today, and one of them is being noisier than the rest.
Yeah. Well, if you can hear something in the background, it's not feedback. It's just a cricket.
It's just a cricket.
I forgot you lived in a desert. I keep forgetting.
I keep forgetting. I had to kick a Gila monster out of my bed the other day.
I know. That's tough life.
But that's a whole nother story.
Exactly. That's a separate podcast. So anyway, death. Basically, 42nd Street opened 1980. Mm-hmm. This was going to be a really important show for Gower Champion because, kind of since I Do, which came just after Hello Dolly,
yep.
nothing else landed. Even though Mac and Mabel is great and it didn't do well for some right. weird reason.
It was not a financial success.
Yeah, it just didn't work. So he was really needing something big.
How life imitates art.
Right? It's so weird. Like, it's so, so strange.
Yeah.
Because I feel... I've talked to you about this before many, many times, mm-hmm. but I'm a big believer in fate
mm-hmm.
and the world meaning something a bit more than what it does.
Uh-huh.
And I find it really fascinating that this... I really haven't said it, but basically he died on opening night.
Yeah.
That this... You look at Rent as well with Jonathan Larson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this beautiful show that talks a lot about death and the nature of dying.
Yeah.
And he wrote this show for his friends and things like that. Like, I don't know, I find it really weird.
Yeah.
I find it weird.
Yeah.
And
it is a piece
way.
Of stage lore. So who kept it? David Merrick. Yeah.
Yeah. David Merrick, the producer.
David Merrick, the producer, had been aware of Champion's passing. He yep. died a couple hours before curtain time, but had kept the entire affair a secret from mm-hmm. cast and company and crew and just about everyone else until after the performance and at a closing curtain speech mm-hmm. announced it to, you know, the tragedy of all.
And didn't even announce it in a very good way. It was very much like, but this is a tragic event. You know, David, you know, Gower Champion has died, and it was very...
Yeah.
It was a bit improper, I would say, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, even just like things like Gower Champion, I think, had been dating
mm-hmm.
The girl who was playing Peggy.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, to, for him to kind of come out and announce it like that, probably definitely knowing the fact that Gary Champion was dating her.
Yeah.
You know, she collapses into this like horrible, sad fit of tears. I can't remember. Is it on Broadway, the American Musical? I think it is. I think the clip of the announcement is there. So if you've got it, watch that. If not, it'll be in the show notes and get it because it's the Bible. Yeah. But
it's,
yeah,
it's,
I don't know.
And tragic, then it just like it's tragic in a very particular show business kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with this. You know, this is at our core. People talk about these sorts of things all the time. It's in There's No Business Like Show Business. Like, what is it? You before the show has started, you learn that your favorite uncle died at dawn. Your mom and pa have parted, but still the show goes on. And there is this underpinning. There's this underpinned ideal in our art that like tragedy happens and it makes our art, and tragedy happens and it supports our art, and life is difficult and we, you know, struggle through with the art. And it has become such a core of what we do, and I think it's, it feels destructive and improper. It feels like something I wish didn't happen as much.
Yeah. I mean, I think this was totally him thinking like a producer and not thinking like a friend.
Right.
Because, you know, he announced it, it was press night, everyone was there, the world's press was there. At the end of this beautiful, uplifting show that he comes out and makes this speech in a very less than decorous manner.
Right.
He's doing it for the headlines. I'm sorry, but he is. Like, and I understand he's desperate and I understand he needs a good break, but I feel there's much better ways of doing it and much more decent ways of doing it than
I struggle with
trying
it so
to grab
much.
Some headlines and going for that, you know, it's like the clickbait of the 80s.
But even in the more contemporary sense with like Jonathan Larson and Rent, which certainly was handled with much more tact and understanding. Larson.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going off memory here, but I believe Larson passed the day of opening or the day of last preview.
It was the day of opening. Yeah, I think.
And they, in his honor, were going to just do the show like a stage reading, like seated at microphones in a more...
Yeah,
and then,
so they said before the show, like it wasn't, by the way, I know you've just had an amazing time watching that, but guess what? It was very much like, we're doing this for Jonathan.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Which seems like a much more proper way to do it.
Absolutely.
Still, to me, feels in that kind of, we are capitalizing on our tragedy to make our art.
Well, no, see, I don't think that with Rent. I don't think that because, like I said, because with Rent, death is very much a part of the show.
That's true.
And because it's you know, semi-autobiographical from Jonathan's perspective of his friends, and growing up in East Village, I think it's more just becomes a tribute to him.
I guess that's true.
As opposed to, we're doing some headline grabbing because, you know, the guy's diagnosed, this will be some great publicity. I don't doubt that that is a secondhand, symptom of it.
Yeah.
But that's just a natural thing, whether they released it to the press as a press release or whether they did it on stage.
Dramatic announcement on stage. Yeah, that's a definite choice. Yeah.
Exactly. I think, it would have happened either way. The show still would have been and got some success from that.
Yeah.
And notoriety, I guess. But one of the things as well, I think, with David Merrick is it's quite stinky, is he's since, after Gary Champion died, he calls it now David Merrick's 42nd Street, which is dark. I think that's dark. Because, you know, obviously Gary Champion wasn't around to fight for his estate and his name in it.
Right.
But it's very much Gary Champion's show. It's, you know, yes, David Merrick grew the money, but it's David Merrick presents Gower Champions 42nd Street. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. No, that's kind of meh.
It's stinky. It's really, really stinky. And obviously he had a lovely long life and I think passed away in 2000 or something.
Yeah. Although this was his pretty much his last big success, 42nd Street.
It didn't. Yeah. Yeah. This was his swan song. Yeah. But it's really, really tragic.
Yeah.
And it's just a weird thing. People dying on opening night. Like
we talked about this briefly off microphone, but it is to me it makes some sense. Because even you hear the perhaps apocryphal story about Irene Ryan walking off stage from Pippin singing, it's time to start living, and then like falling down dead of a heart attack. Like these stories, one, I think we build them up because of this underpinning of our life is a support system for our art and not the other way around. And so, you know, we hear about them. Also, I think there's some confirmation bias going on here. Like, we don't talk about all the other artists who didn't die on opening night because there's nothing coincidental there. But I also think, you know, putting on a show takes a lot of energy, causes a lot of stress. I mean, it almost goes back to the plot of 42nd Street. But the doctors tell the director at the beginning, like, you're going to have one more nervous breakdown, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, Garchomp, he was very much on his last legs. Like, he was really ill.
Yeah. And so, like, the stress of putting on a show, of course, that's going to have physiological toll on your well-being. And then on opening night, you have all this stress buildup or all this stress release or all of it all together, combined with staying up late, combined with partying, combined with whatever drinking you're doing. Like, it is a little unsurprising to me that these things happen from time to time.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But still very sad.
Very sad.
If you've an ounce of rhythm down in your shoes, then I'll change your point of view. If you've been singing a sad and blue song,
go into your dance
until you learn how to sing a new song.
Go into your dance. Don't be complaining.
Learn how to smile.
Okay, let's move on from the sadness. Oh, do you know what? Even just saying it, you know the movie Inside Out?
Yeah.
Sadness is one of my favorite characters.
She's fabulous.
She's up there now with Wally and Woody, and I'm ready to get a plushie.
Get a little plushie? Get a little sadness plushie?
Exactly.
What's her face from The Office?
What?
Have you watched The American Office?
Oh, was that the actress?
Yes.
Aha, okay. She's great. Her voice is perfect. She's also in The OA. Have you seen The OA?
The OA? No, what's that about?
It's on Netflix. It's amazing.
Uh-huh. All right.
I'll go see it. It's a Netflix original.
I will look it up.
Netflix knocking it out of the park. anyway, 42nd Street. So, I think this is probably some of the best choreography that's ever existed on Broadway. Discuss.
That is a bold statement. Tell me why.
I know. I didn't say it's the best, but I said it's among up there with the greats.
Yeah.
And that's because in many ways, Garchampion was up there with the greats.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't tell if you're being silent here, or if like, you have connection issues.
It's... I still, the two you've listed there, Fosse and Jerry Robbins, I like their stuff better than his.
Oh, yeah, no complaint. Like, you know, my favorite stuff art comes from them. But I mean, the dancing in this show and the things that they did, in terms of a tap musical.
That's true.
In terms of a tap musical, I think it's some of the greatest. Yeah. You know, until then. Obviously, we'd had Anything Goes way back in the day and, revivals and things pop out.
Right.
And Anything Goes has some great tap moments. But I think the opening to 42nd Street is up there with the opening to A Chorus Line.
Yeah.
It's up there with the opening of West Side Story.
Yeah.
Like, it's just sensational.
Yeah. It is.
The, like, half-legged, showing just at the knees, just all of these feet tap dancing is really alluring and it's really exciting.
Yeah.
And all you can hear is just this great tap, and it kind of sets you up. It shows you, look, this show, you're just going to like the dancing, all right? Yeah. It's that, don't focus on anything else. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Watch us tap dance because we're going to do it really well.
Yeah. That bothers me.
Why?
Because we do musical theater for the story. I do musical theater for the story.
Yeah. I do musical theater for many things.
Yeah.
I love the musical Fosse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that is about the dancing. It's a celebration of what Bob Fosse can do. And to me, it's still very much a musical.
Yeah.
And it's great in terms of its choreography. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I just feel like in the same way with dancing, singing, acting,
mm-hmm.
your three disciplines that pop into musical theater, right. Some shows focus on one more than the other.
Yeah.
And I would say this one focuses a heck of a lot more on the dancing.
Yeah. I think my groans about it go a little deeper, and it has to do with this being a musical about putting on musicals, all the way back from its 1930s and roots to Champion's choreography on Broadway. The conceit is that most of this choreography is based around the show they're putting on, and so is stylistically appropriate to the show they're putting on. In the same way with the movie. And so the show they're putting on is supposed to mirror Broadway shows of the time, but it feels like we're making a meta commentary on something that doesn't actually exist. Like, it is hard for me to point to the musical on Broadway in the 1930s that is just a hoofer, that is just a bunch of tap dancing with, like, Bupkis zero plot. That feels like an earlier era thing, something that we're past, which is why we're wrapping it in this meta story of putting on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we missed a step there, all towards creating what has certainly become the stereotype icon of what quote-unquote Broadway choreography looks like. But to me, Broadway choreography looks like movie cinematography. Like, choreography exists on Broadway in a million different ways. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't, like, a Broadway look. There's just whatever is appropriate for that particular thing. Just as there's not, like, one genre of filming a movie that exists. There's, like, a million different kinds. But then somehow this plotless choreography has bubbled to the top as the icon. It is certainly athletically impressive, but it's not in support of anything.
That's interesting. This has been something really, really interesting point.
It's something I've struggled with for a long time, and that I still don't know if I'm putting it in the right words. The moment I feel it most is that it's a moment that baffles me, and that I've been trying to write a video around for literally 2 years now, and I can never figure quite out. It's the concept of the down-tempo showstopper. This happens in all sorts of musicals. Well, well, hello, kick. Kick, Dolly, and we're dancing, kick. Kick, Dolly, da-da. And the whole audience stands up and claps. It happens in 42nd Street, too. Like,
And Lullaby Broadway.
Exactly. Come on along and listen to... Right? And we hit that down-tempo showstopper, and usually it's a kick line, but it can be just about anything. But something about that setup of, like, the song builds, and the tempo and the dynamics build, and then we stop, and there's, like, two or three fermata notes. And it's like, dun, 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 boom, step, kick, step. Every single time, and the audience roars without fail. You know, we use it in it's parodied in Be Our Guest, in Beauty and the Beast. Like, near the very end, there's that moment. It is like a musical theater trope that is, like, stops the show in a really good way. But why? It's just impressive. It's just physically impressive. It just stirs something in you that feels like, oh, now we clap now. In the same way that, like, a blackout and a really good button tells you to clap now. But it's not in support of... It's like this weird social agreement we've all come to that we're here to praise, you know, and of course we're here to praise the athleticism. Like, I don't want to downplay that. It's physically impressive that these things are happening. But in so many of more contemporary musicals, we are here to be taken away, are here to like assume that these are real characters on stage doing this thing, and like we have some suspension of disbelief with the singing, but that still fits to me. Like some of the other suspension of disbelief in the world happens, but this kick line always happens at the moment in the choreography where I'm like, why are we still dancing? What happened to the plot? All of this wrapped up in, it seems very founded in the tropes that 42nd Street the movie creates and fosters. And it's why I struggle with it.
Okay. I can't see why it's a bad thing. I'm yet to be able to come onto your side of why it's a bad thing. Because first, I would say it really only happens in the Lullaby of Broadway.
Yeah.
Which is the kind of 11 o'clock number.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the big turn.
Yeah.
And it's just a big ensemble moment.
Right.
But to me, like, Lullaby of Broadway is the catchiest tune.
Yes.
But it's not the biggest number.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
But like, even, you know, we're in the money, which is in the show within the show, ladies, 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 or whatever the heck it's called.
Yeah,
I'll never get it right. Starts with plot as much as you get from the show within the show. I found some money. What is it? Oh my God, we're so rich. We're in the money. Mm-hmm. We're in the money. Da 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 da. We got a little bit of what it takes to get along. And that's it. That's the plot. Then we just repeat that a million times, and then we stop repeating that, and then we tap dance. Why? Why do we tap dance? Because it's impressive? Because we're so excited that we got this money that we can't help but dancing?
So wait, pause. Are you saying that dance breaks are a bad thing?
I'm saying that I find there are more motivated dance breaks in other musicals. I find that 42nd Street is the worst offender of dance breaks. Because
I'm struggling with this because, you know, because of what it is, because it's an adaptation of a 1933 Busby Berkeley movie.
No, yes.
That's why it's got a dance break in it. Do you know what I mean? So they're not going to give it. It's the same way that, you know, Crazy for You being an adaptation of the Gershwins, American Paris, which was just on, an adaptation of the Gershwins.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know. Of Rodgers and Hammerstein, filled with dance breaks. Like, it's...
But I think they're different. I'm still
in
piecing together why, for sure.
The dance break in Farmer and the Cowman different from the dance break in We're in the Money?
Because Farmer and the Cowman is still about... Farmer and the Cowman comes from a place related to the specific plot of the story, right? Mm-hmm. We're in the Money is a, stick with me on this, is a parody of something like Farmer and the Cowman from an angle that I don't appreciate. This is where we're in like the meta world based on something that's not real. Farmer and the Cowman comes from, we're having this social, we're getting together and we're going to dance because that's what we've been told to do. And so you can still continue the plot like that. We're in the Money, at least as far as the 1980s version is compared. I think pulling things from the 1933 movie is one thing, but I think there's something else going on here too, because they also decided to incorporate We're in the Money. It wasn't in the particular movie.
But because it's a hit.
Right, because it's a hit.
In the same way Crazy for You incorporated a lot of Gershwin songs that weren't in... You know,
yes.
You know what I mean? To create, oh, here's the hit so that you know that.
Right, but at least Crazy for You endeavors to incorporate them into the plot. We're in the Money.
Slap That Bass? Slap That Bass is in no way plot related.
Yes, but it's still about a upright bass that a character in the show pulls on stage. I do think Crazy for You is the good challenge for this sort of thing, is what I'm still working it through in my mind. We're in the Money exists as a big production number because... quote unquote, big production numbers exist.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to agree with you on this one because I just feel like this is a core part of musical theatre. I understand that, you know, there's in the same way that there's genres of music, there's genres of musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is a very legitimate genre of musical because it's existed all the way through the whole genre. You know what I mean? The whole genre that is musical theatre. And it will continue to exist.
Uh-huh.
So I think to write it off as nonsense is unfair.
Yeah.
And unfair because it is the basis of the things that have come today that are much more arty and much more kind of interesting in terms of storytelling.
Yeah.
I feel like this is these kind of shows are the ones that are at the core of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I still don't know why it bothers me then.
Mm-hmm.
It feels
That's
like
interesting.
It feels like there's more room for art to be. It feels lazy, and I don't know why.
A dance break feels lazy.
A dance break for the sake of dance break feels lazy. Because there are better ways.
I mean, I get what you mean. I know that, like, you know, a dance break which, you know, narrates a story,
right,
is fantastic.
Yeah.
But you know, even like let's take our home favorite, something like Great Comet.
Yeah.
Balaga, you're not advancing the story.
No, but right? It's still as several members of the productions quipped back at me. They were like, no, there's no justification for a 15-minute.
Yeah, exactly. But
right
so
now.
Then are you like, well, then that's nonsense. Take it out.
I'm like, at least there's justification for a 7-minute dance break there.
Right. Well, We're in the Money's one is shorter.
Yeah, but We're in the Money is like. Because it, I think I'm tied up in the fact that it is part of the musical in the musical and like seems to exist.
I don't think We're in the Money is. I think We're in the Money is them just finding money
but
and singing about it together. And then it turns into this big dream fest of wouldn't it be great to have money?
Maybe I'm off base on this one. I don't know. Then I guess I don't know what bothers me about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something,
interesting.
And like, I certainly enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. I'm right there with everyone standing and clapping when, you know, Dolly starts kicking with all those waiters. Like, or, you know, Mame walks down the stairs again. Like, that's absolutely something that gets me going. I just can't, with everything else in musical theater, I can place why I like it. What got me to the point of enjoying that? When they go, well, hello, Dolly, and start high kicking, I don't know why I like it. Maybe. Maybe that's
right.
What
okay.
With.
So because it's camp. Because it's camp, and I think that's fine.
Yeah, but I don't.
Do you
like
know what I mean?
Camp.
Because it's fabulous and fun.
Yeah, but I don't. I run a musical theater channel, and I don't like camp.
That's a lie. You've never said a bigger lie in your life. It's the biggest lie you've ever told. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just fun, and I think that's. You know, I'm going to sound very man in chair here, but that's what musicals, at the vein running through, that meaty vein in your Wagyu beef steak, is this kind of fun, lively musical, and that will be the thing that keeps musical theatre burning.
Yeah.
Sure, on the top in this lovely marinated upper crust of our Wagyu beef steak, you've got some fabulous pieces of art.
Yeah.
But at the core, the taste and the meat and the juice of it,
it's always gonna
comes
be...
from this.
I wonder, I think this might be our fundamental disagreement, which is why we run a podcast so well. I'd turn your soup upside down.
You'd turn my steak inside out, would you?
Basically. To bring it back onto some of the topics we actually wanted to talk about. But so the 2001 Tony's Award intro for 42nd Street is fabulous. not one of the many reasons, because on whatever compilation, Playbill compilation it is, it's introduced by Robert Goulet looking like he hates life. Which will go in the show. Have you seen this? It's going to go in the show.
Yeah, I've got the full version for the show notes. So don't worry.
Hello.
It's great.
I'm Robert Goulet. 42nd Street is a music. And he's like so angry at life.
I know.
But they start, like a lot of Tony intros, they start in their theater and make it to Radio City while tap dancing. And the joke of it all is they tap dance out of the theater, arms in the air, tap dance down the sidewalk, arms in the air, tap dance down onto the subway platform, like looking left, looking right, through the turnstiles, and then sit down on the subway and start kick lining. And then some poor planted chorus girl in her contemporary outfit's like, oh, what's this? Oh, I can join in with the choreography. And yes, that's funny and that's camp. And that gives it a purpose more so. Like, that sort of self-commentary isn't in 42nd Street the musical proper.
I don't look at that as self-commentary. at all. I just look at it as fun. I think it's a great fun way to start the show. Yeah. And it shows off 42nd Street. It shows off that here's a bunch of athletes doing some sensational choreography with the backing of some great tunes.
Yeah.
But then again, like I do, dance to me is a huge part of musical theatre.
Oh,
I love the evolution of dance throughout musical theatre. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like in terms of tap, to bring it right back onto the point of the start, but in terms of tap, I feel like this is some of the best that exists out there.
Absolutely. I think my struggle is, what I love about musical theatre is the gestalt of it all, is that it's the sum of its parts. It is the acting and dance and singing, and you can't...
No, that is the cream. That's the cream of the crop. But obviously within that, you need to be able to look and appreciate all of the other gems that are there. I feel you need to. I don't feel you can ever, you know, I mean, if you love something so much, you need to take it for the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
You can't hide and demerit the stuff that you might not appreciate as much. I feel like you still need to find the goodness in that.
I guess that's true. Yeah. You've convinced me. A little.
Have I? Have a little. Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that. Thanks. But just go and look at everyone else. Go and look at the 2001 20 Words intro, because I think, you know, until we got Neil Patrick Harris on the stage, nothing is better.
It's really, really
but
good.
But I did rewatch 2009, and my God, is it bad. Oh, God. Do you know, 2009 was my first Tony Awards.
Really?
That I watched live all the way through. I'm surprised you didn't run screaming. And that was the one with Rock of Ages, Bopped on the Head, Pal Joey, Shrek. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Everyone dancing to Hair at the end, Elton John and Liza Minnelli, like, hand in hand. Like, it was a car crash.
Yeah.
And that was my first. I'm surprised I, like, wasn't put off musical theater for good.
Do you know my favorite Tony Awards intro to Love to Hate? It's Rosie O'Donnell. It's the year last time they revived How to Succeed with Matthew Broderick and Megan Mullally.
Right.
And Rosie O'Donnell is backed by, like, a gospel choir. And it's like, it's Rosie O'Donnell singing in air quotes, which is more like Rosie O'Donnell rapping and like step tapping. And the whole point of the whole song is like, I bet you didn't know that these TV stars were once on Broadway. And like, God, how much more can you reach? It's like, I apologize that Broadway is an art form that exists. Here's a better art form that we have people from.
Exactly. And you'll know these people.
And I think the chorus is like, bet you didn't know they did a Broadway show. It's like, God, why?
I know. Tony openers. They seem to be doing all right. We'll just ignore Hugh Jackman.
But James Corden was great, was really moving.
That was beautiful. I think that's what they know that works now. Yeah. They know that moving works.
And like sentimental, and like the underlying theme of the whole thing, which I know we both appreciate, is like, there are kids at home watching this right now who will end up on Broadway in a couple years.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
That's the really are right nice. There. Yeah.
So yay.
We'll see what Hooray they do this year.
I know. It's such a great season.
Yeah, we can't. I'm sure we'll do an episode when things get closer. It's gonna be a rough one. It's gonna be real. It's gonna be a knockdown drag out.
I was writing up a guide. My friend's going to New York, and I was writing up a guide for him.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, I'll write like some of the best shows, the top ones, that you should see, and I ended up just writing out them all. I was like, oh my God, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
At least
Side Note, Come From Aways on Spotify.
Yeah.
Get it listened.
Have you listened to it yet? I've listened to bits and pieces.
Started. So far so good, by the way.
Yeah. The previews I saw at BroadwayCon were really fun. Really fun and interesting.
So far so good.
Better,
so
exceeding my expectations.
Yeah. For sure.
A nickel?
Will you hold your horses and let me get the dirt off? A dime!
We're in the money. We're in the money.
We got a lot of what it takes to get along.
We're in the money. The skies are sunny.
Come on, my heart.
I'm really loving my titles.
Okay? I really, which is cool.
Temporary.
You should say one out loud.
Contemporary awakenings of classic musicals.
That could be.
I feel like this actually weirdly stems on from what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
But it seems like with the recent success of American in Paris, it seems like if you want to do pretty well with a musical, adapt a 1930s film.
Yeah. Well, this,
do you know what I mean?
This goes back to the thing I was saying earlier about this being contemporaneous when it was first written, but now wanting to do it again says a lot. Like, we're drawing an intrinsic connection between the time when you revive the show and the time when it's set. And it actually simplifies things. There's a great XKCD comic that's a bunch of timelines. I think it's books about like the moving timeline of where books pass when they're closer to the time they were written about than they are to now. So, like, if you write a book in the 1800s about the 1600s, at what point is it a closer representation of the 1600s than closer to where we live right now?
I fully understand. Yeah.
And so this is, it's wonderfully interesting when you revive, especially a musical like this about the Great Depression in, say, the 1980s.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you do wonder, like, why did they choose 42nd Street? Was it just because it was the one of the bigger, you know, old Hollywood films?
Yeah.
But, you know, why didn't they go for Singing in the Rain? Like, Singing in the Rain is the biggest.
Right. Well, and even
so, why didn't they then want to do that?
Exactly. And, like, it's not like the current trend of reviving children's shows from the 90s into millennial-themed movies. Like, they're doing new Power Rangers because we all grew up with the Power Rangers. They didn't revive 42nd Street because the young people who were watching 42nd Street in the Great Depression are now the musical theater going audience. Like, that's not that doesn't exist. They're old or dead.
But then I do find that interesting though with American in Paris. And I was really grateful actually when they did it because it's my thing, because I love those musicals.
Right.
But I was like, I feel like it's a genre that's starting to be forgotten about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I know, obviously, they did, like, a Wonderful Town Revival, On the Town Revival. Like, they're not forgetting about it completely.
Right.
But in terms of bringing in a new audience to that kind of thing, I was pleased that American in Paris did well, because I was worried that if it kind of fell flat on its face.
Yeah.
You know, we'd forget all about old Hollywood.
Well, but I do wonder, as you said, tying into what we talked about, if it is, there is something intrinsic in the human nature about loving these kinds of things and, like, having to stand up and clap after the down-tempo showstopper for no particular, and not knowing quite why. You know, seeing the Rockettes kick in the air and being like, that's damn impressive. And just being moved by that. Instead of being moved by, you know, Natasha crying in the middle of Act Two.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it's that idea of, like, you look back to the Follies era and you're like, why was that so successful? You know, I mean, why was it so successful then?
Right.
Because they weren't doing anything special. I mean, a lot of the vaudeville acts obviously were, because they were, you know, singing opera whilst riding a unicycle on the back of a monkey kind of thing. But when it came to the Ziegfeld Follies, it was just a bunch of pretty women wearing, you know, beautiful feathered gowns and hats.
And, like, it's not impressive like, say, the circus is, where it's death-defying feats, where it's, like, really set up as, like, here is explicitly why it is impressive that this man releases this bar hanging through the air and flips around three times and grabs another one. Like, of course that's physically impressive. But, like, everyone walking out on stage at the same time, putting their right foot first and their left foot second, like, I know that absolutely underplays what choreography is, but we're not doing, like, choreography, although it has molded and moved throughout the ages, hasn't changed all that much in the last century. Like,
yeah, there's only so many things you can do with your legs.
Exactly. And so we keep coming back to it, whereas, like, we keep breaking records in sports, whereas, you know, I do think things like trapeze acts, things like circus acts, have gotten more intense and complex over the years.
Yeah.
A kick line today might just be a little more synchronized than a kick line 100 years ago, and that's probably just because we've started training kids earlier.
Yeah, and it is, I guess it comes from that kind of perfected eye, because obviously when they're doing it then for the first time, you've got nothing to look back on and nothing to compare it to and nothing to say,
right,
hey, we can be better than that. You know what I mean? Whereas obviously through the ages, you can be like, well, that's sure, that's how they did it, but look how we can do it.
Right, exactly. And I also think, you know, it's the difference between 100 people auditioning for the Rockettes and 1 million people auditioning for the Rockettes.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You just have a bigger
pool. How did your audition for the Rockettes go?
I forgot to shave my left leg and it knocked me down like 15 Tommy. Points for that. I know. As amateur mistake.
Well, for dance, I got 10.
Yeah.
For looks, I got 11.
I'm excited to see your boobs.
Dance 10, looks 11, and now I'm off in heaven.
That doesn't scan very well. No, I do, but just as a little sidebar on that topic, in the movie, I enjoy how they portray how auditions take place. Like,
right.
I wonder how accurate this was to auditions in the 1930s, or if it's exaggerated for the screen. I certainly think the way a director interacts with people is exaggerated for the screen. I can't imagine walking up to an actress in the middle of the show and being like, you've got it! You're doing great! Go back out there and do it even more! You're gonna be amazing! Like,
I know.
Go do the show.
I feel like of all of the shows, and obviously we say that this is kind of the start, the movie, sorry, was kind of the first look into the backstage, the peak.
Yeah.
But I feel like A Chorus Line is the only one that's real.
That's pretty accurate, exactly.
Right?
But no, like, this audition line is like, all right, next eight girls, line up. All right, pull up your skirts, looks good, exactly. Looks good, not you, looks good. All right, next eight, here we go. Like, that's ridiculous.
And that's what it was, though, like, that's...
Yeah.
I just can't imagine that.
Man, it was a different time.
Imagine being told no. Like, you're like, what the more can I do? Well, it's a leg.
Yeah, this is why, and I'm glad there's at least, I see it a lot, at least in the Chicago theater scene, but I think it's definitely going. There does seem to be a change in, a paradigm shift going on in the professional theater world that I think is right and appropriate. We are recognizing much more so that, like, we are human beings who use our human being existence to do our art, and that there's a special care that needs to come with that. Part of it is old standing sexist and awful attitudes in the world, and like, you know, auditioning people based on their body and based on looks. And like, we exist with, you know, bodies as our tools, as actors and things. And there will always be a little bit of that because that's the business, because that's, you know, we're about casting pretty people, but there is some acknowledgement that, like, pretty people come in all different shapes and sizes.
Exactly.
And there are people, you know, we are all pretty on the inside. And because we're talking about what we look like on the outside, we must do it with care and intent.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel really in recent years, if you look at Broadway ensembles, that's happening a lot more.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you think of something like the Comet Ensemble, Come From Away Ensemble as well.
Yep.
Ages.
Yep.
Shapes, sizes, everything.
Yep.
Such a scale.
Yep.
Which is great.
Yeah. And like, it's a rough journey.
More,
you know, we've done a lot of things, like, since at least 1930, if not before, we've been like having girls line up and pull their skirts up. And there's a lot to undo there. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying at every single step.
Absolutely.
Put my foot down.
Tommy said it, guys, okay? No more licking up girls' skirts.
Yeah, this gay cis white man has said. So now it's, God.
It's cool, we're LGBTQA+, so. Hooray.
I do want to hit this last bullet point, because I think this is fascinating.
Sorry, I thought you'd hit it.
So, 1933, 42nd Street movie comes out during the death of musical theater on the screen.
Yep.
As we've said. And revives it.
Yep.
Then, the revival in 1980... which played forever and ever and ever, changed theaters. It moved between, I think, 3 different theaters on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what kicked it out? First, it was kicked out by Cats, and then it was kicked out by the Phantom of the Opera. And I do think this points to, at least in the 80s, 90s, a changing trend, a changing micro trend in musical theater, that we're kicking out 42nd Street for Cats.
Yeah, exactly. And it, but I think, because again, we talked about, when we did Cats, obviously we talked about this a lot, and as to why the ALW machine worked.
Yeah.
And obviously we're saying, like, a lot of new musicals aren't being created. But I think 42nd Street is such an interesting exception. Like, obviously it won the Tony Award for Best Musical.
Yeah. I think, and so the revival.
At the time, something was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's really interesting that it comes when it comes at the end of the 70s, where we've had a lot of these very new ideas brought into musical theatre, and lots of things were being challenged on all fronts. Here we have this really, like we said, traditional old Hollywood, like, style.
About as traditional as you can get, I would say.
Exactly. And it won Best Musical. I still find that really fascinating. Yeah.
And I do think some of that is attributable to the La La Land effect, to the fact that the people who are voting are the people who like the drama of a backstage musical. But only some of it.
Yeah, definitely. But then, obviously, you know, we got something new again in the shape of Alwa.
Yeah. I wonder, do you think... I think we're past this. At least now, in our microcosm of a world, I don't think a big
Android
old...
Android Weber?
Well, I hope we're past... Clearly, we're not past that. He's
not.
He's got, like,
this is the era. This is the new era.
God, why? No, like, the hoofing, tap dancing... Although, I guess they are reviving Crazy for You. So maybe I'm wrong.
Yep.
But I wonder how it'll do.
And we're getting a revival over here for 42nd Street. I know, but that's the thing. Is, like, I don't know. I don't think it will ever die, because I know American in Paris had a lot more ballet in it.
Right.
They're so beautiful. But, like, I don't know. I can see this going forever and ever, because at the end of the day, it's just fun to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really fun to do.
Maybe I'm stuck in the trap of time immemorial, that, like, because clearly it was happening in the 1930s, like, oh, this kind of fluffy stuff is never gonna succeed, people don't like it, it's gonna go, and, like, then it came right back again, and it feels like every 10 years, every 20 years, be like, and it's the last good solid book musical of its era, and then another one comes out in 2 years, and
yeah, exactly,
like, oh, and it's the last one of, and then it just keeps happening.
Yeah, that's it. Is it will keep on happening. Now, the question is, will we ever get another new 42nd Street? Will we ever see a, you know, here I am turning this easy story into a visual spectacle?
Yeah.
You know, that's, like I said, kind of focusing on the dance.
Yeah.
Will we ever see that? I don't know.
That's a good question. I wonder if that's going to more spin off into its own kind of art forms. Like, that's where, you know, maybe we will see the revival of more ballet or dance focused places, or more like oddball things like Cirque hitting Broadway. I wonder if they fill that kind of niche in the world. But then again, they seem kind of too arty. They, you know,
But like for Cirque, I mean, for something like Cirque du Soleil, I wouldn't go see it because it's not a musical.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if, for example, Randy Skinner, who choreographed the revival of 42nd Street and etc. If he brought out a new dance musical and it was quite, like, really exciting and revolutionary, I'd want to go see that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, I wish I got to see American in Paris. And I'm really, well, when it opens in London, I'll definitely go see it there.
Right.
Because I'm like, oh, I want to see how they're pushing dance.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It does kind of harks back to what we were talking about a wee bit earlier. But, you know, it's... Now that people are reflecting on what's come before, for example, when Randy Skinner choreographed the 2001, he took the magic that Gower Champion created and just tightened it up.
Yeah.
Because he was there in the original production.
Yeah.
And was able to make it grow.
Right.
And I think it's that kind of thing. It's like, well, what, you know, is people keep looking back on things.
Right. I wonder
how are they gonna keep.
Yeah, or if we're going to have anything new. I mean, I doubt we'll have anything brand new, because there, as awful as it is, some of the magic of 42nd Street is based in that initial impulse of the 1930s of lining 50 yep. girls up in a row and looking at their legs.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, there's wonderful things that like impressive acrobatics and dance things that happen there that are absolutely not related to anything super sexist, but it comes from a very sexist place. And we do feel at least an obligation to try and be past that in our artistic worlds. And so, you know, that's will we find something else like that that doesn't feel sexist but still puts us in a place where we see this kind of show? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Is that we need to find a time that had that magic, that had that hope, because that's obviously what this, you know, it was in the Great Depression, they were wanting this hope. You need to be able to find something like that and harness that.
Yeah.
And use that to project all this tap dancing joy.
Yeah.
Who knows, sir?
Who knows? Maybe someone out there right now is going to write that musical.
It's me.
It's me.
I wrote it.
So if you...
Yeah.
Street. Did you meet those dancing feet on the avenue I'm taking you to? That lyric.
Which one?
That lyric is kind of the come and meet. I mean, they're doing it because they want to do the internal rhyme of avenue and I'm taking you to, but it's not an avenue. It's 42nd Street.
Street. It's very confusing.
Yeah. Do you know what else is really confusing about that song that I only figured out on this last listen through? It's like dainty mateys from the 80s, little nifties from the 50s. They're not talking about decades. They're talking about street numbers.
I know, which is cool, isn't it?
It is cool. Once you figure it out, you're like, oh, you're talking about like different neighborhood people. And then 42nd Street is where we are. And it's neat. I didn't get there. And then I did. The end.
Wouldn't it be funny if they were talking about it from the 1880s?
Well, that's where I got there, because
in the 1850s.
For me, 42nd Street exists as something from the 1980s, so of course you can talk about something from the 1950s, but why on earth in 1933 would you talk about like little nifties from the 1850s?
Exactly.
Like, oh, these salacious women from the mid-1800s.
Absolutely. Mary Poppins, eat your heart out. Time for a quiz question.
You ready for this one?
Yeah.
Great. There are three musicals that we know of with songs in them titled, quote, The Confrontation, end quote. One of them is the musical we're talking about next week.
Whoa, that's tricky, that question, because you're never going to know the answer.
You got a 1 in 3 chance.
A 1 in 3 chance of winning all those grand prizes. If you want to get in touch with us, you can. Come find me over on Twitter at Asen Hendricks and YouTube at Asen Hendricks as well.
And I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube, or there's our show Twitter at Jim and Tomic. Also on Facebook, search Jim and Tomic Musical Theater's Happy Hour.
We're there. Or you can pop over to our website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to our Reddit discussion where we will be chatting up a storm. The discussions have been flying, Thomas.
That's good.
We've been doing so well recently. We've been getting over 10 every week.
Over 10?
So keep it up, guys.
I'm happy. I'm happy people are there. That's wonderful.
I know.
Please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really, really helps us out.
And we shall see you next week.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
My chair's falling
He's
apart.
He's down, ladies and gentlemen. He's down.
I just wanted it to
Tommy,
go.
Tommy, how many have you had? Are you still drunk from your birthday?
I just had a Moscow Mule this morning.
Hmm.
No, I haven't been able to drink because I've been watching high schoolers perform a Midsummer Night's Dream.
It's a creepy, creepy thing if you didn't know you were a teacher.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
America. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.